Okay, I'll call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission for Thursday, August 14th to order. And that's for roll call.
Commissioner Wyatt.
Here.
Commissioner Christie.
Here.
Commissioner Melskow.
Here.
Commissioner Rapa.
Here.
Chairperson Rose.
Here. And I ask that we all please stand for a flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Thank you. The first item on our agenda, and our agendas are these little tan pieces of paper available in that wooden box. And our first item is the public comment. Anybody wishing to address the commission, if you'd be so kind as to fill out one of these speaker slips and put up to the end of the day, Oz, and we'll get your 3 minutes on the record. I have a couple speaker slips. The first one is Doug Filippone, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning, Commissioner Rose and Commissioners. My name is Doug Filippone. I'm with the Santa Margarita Ranch. As you may know, we submitted a letter to Victor Holanda requesting a special meeting be held on our behalf to review the Santa Margarita Ranch proposal for our ag cluster. There's been a little bit of misinformation out there about the reasoning for that. Some have saying that we're just trying to get a rush to judgment and all that. And I think the explanation from our side of this is will provide a little more cohesive discussion instead of, let's see, our first meeting has been almost 5 weeks ago. By the time you hit our next meeting, it'll be 6 weeks from the previous meeting. A lot of discussion of questions and answers that are in the EIR that will be probably repeated only because of the time distance in between. It's been said that we're asking for special favors. What we're asking for here is getting this cohesive discussion so that deliberation can take place and a decision can be made. What's happening now is really not fair to other applicants. As we are on numerous agendas and we're bumping other applicants or moving other applicants around, also the community has to keep returning for their input. And so we are asking that a special meeting be had so we can spend a full day devoted to questions and answers and deliberate on this issue. If that could not happen, well, we'd request that on the 28th we could be moved to the afternoon and spend the balance of the day afternoon on our issue, on our application, and have that day and go on into that day. And that's the basis of our request. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next speaker, Michael Wynn, and that's the last speaker slip I have. Might be one coming here. Mr. Wynn.
Good morning. Chairman Roos and members of the commission. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm from Napomo. And the most important part of revising what you do, I mean, nobody knows what you do better than you do. I think you probably can come up with some suggestions. I heard one from Chairman Roos, for example, that possibly you would meet 3 times a month instead of 2 and devote one of them to ordinances only. That sounds like a very sensible suggestion to me. I'm sure you can come up with many others. What I would say is that sometimes abusive process, and I referred to that, seems to me to be going on. And I want to be perfectly clear. I don't think any of you are doing that. I think there was a little ambiguity on Tuesday. Some people thought maybe I thought the commission was dragging feet. But there's a lot of things that happen that slow the process down, and sometimes unconscionably. For example, we have contracted out at times to have certain kinds of work done for you, environmental work, other kinds of work, and I have found some of that work to be seriously defective. There's been whole pages interpolated into the report that came from some unknown source. There have been a variety of things that have happened like that. This slows the process down. If I hire a contractor to pave a street in front of my house and he leaves a great big pothole, he has to come back later on and fix it at his own expense. I don't have to have a second contract to get the hole filled. And I would encourage your council particularly the Board of Supervisors, to be a little tougher on some of this contract work and to write into the contract that if it's seriously or materially defective, they repair it on their own time and it does not cost the taxpayer any more money. I think that slows you down, causes a lot of us to get excited when we see these errors, when we come in saying, how can you approve this? These elements are missing. And none of us want to slow things down like that. On the other hand, some issues simply do take a significant amount of time. They're major issues, they have major policy implications, and I do not encourage you to go racing through those simply to make people happy, people like me or some, maybe people like Mr. Filipponi, I don't know. The point is that I think we have to do things as timely as we can, and you guys are the key to making it happen. Thank you.
Thank you. David Blakely, followed by Carolyn Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I want to thank the Planning Commission for all the dedicated service and hard work they perform for the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. It's a thankless job, and y'all are really doing a very good job in terms of making sure that San Luis Obispo County remains and becomes the kind of place we all want to live in. So thank you very much. In regards to the issue of speeding up or setting hearing dates for the Santa Margarita Ranch, I would like to encourage you to continue to follow your existing processes. I don't think there in the history of the Planning Commission has ever been a time when you have given this kind of special treatment to a property owner or to a development proposal. I think that it's a very complicated project, as you've seen. With 11 Class 1 impacts identified in the Environmental Impact Report, I think that it requires some very serious review and deliberation on your part. There is a lot of disagreement among experts. You've heard from the ranch owners' experts. You've heard from the EIR consultants. And I think it's important for you to get into it very deeply to get a good understanding of the issues so that you can make an informed decision on this very important project. I think to give them special treatment is going to set a very dangerous precedent for this body. You have a lot of other applicants that are in a similar situation as the owners of the Santa Margarita Ranch who would love to get their projects in front of you as quickly as possible. And if you give the Santa Margarita Ranch that privilege, I think you need to also extend it to other individuals, and that will create a lot of problems in terms of the scheduling for this body. I think it's also important to continue with the meetings as you are, where you're looking at individual subjects and going into depth. You have a very committed, knowledgeable staff, but it has gone through a number of changes over the history of this project. And the new staff members that are taking the lead on this project are getting up to speed and understanding the issues and understanding the desires of the commission and the community in terms of articulating responses to you all. And I think they need the time to make sure that you get the kind of information you need to make informed decisions. Also, to have meetings as suggested, you're going to have staff people and professional folks sitting around here throughout the day where they may only be called on for a part of the day to do testimony, and that's really not fair to them. Whereas if you hone in on specific issues, you can get the experts on those specific issues here so you can get the information you need. So hopefully that you'll consider to continue moving forward where you take a subject at a time. Looking at the EIR is very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carolyn Christensen, that's the last speaker slip I have for public comment.
Thank you, Chairman Roos and County Planning Commissioners. I'm also going to echo Mr. Blakely's thanks to you as commissioners for your job. As I'm going to make a few comments about fast-tracking and streamlining both of them. They tend to make every effort to bring themselves up to speed on any issues they're going to face, and I know most of the people who come onto the City Planning Commission literally spend hours and hours and hours and hours watching old tapes to catch themselves up. Watching Santa Margarita tapes might be a little more daunting than usual, but I certainly think that's something that commissioners tend to do because they want to make sure that they're ready for any issue that may be ongoing that they're going to be hearing. So I personally have been already reading staff reports and written materials on issues that I think may carry over into my term, and I have been watching your meetings on television and will continue to do so. So any concern about a new planning commission not being able to be up to speed or be able to handle the issues that are involved in the Santa Margarita matter or any of the other complicated matters you deal with, I think are not only not grounded with me personally, but just don't follow in the way that planning commissioners take over their jobs. So, in my mind, the need to fast-track any application or project just doesn't make sense if the goal is to avoid, you know, going in front of a new planning commission or some new planning commissioners. It does set a very bad precedent, and I just don't. I think that fast-tracking any application, except for I can't even think of a reason, basically defeats the purpose of public hearings, and that's not a good thing. With that said, I do think some planning, some projects and issues before a planning commission can benefit from extra or special meetings. They tend to be very complicated general plan updates and large special and specific plans such as Santa Margarita and that kind of thing. So these projects are very complicated. They do take a lot of time. They do take a lot of really focused...
And welcome to the red light that's on.
Oh, discussion. I'm almost done. So it can be helpful, but I don't think that they necessarily should shorten the overall time it takes a matter to get to through the whole process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I guess we have one more here. Dorothy Jennings.
Good morning. I'm Dorothy Jennings speaking for North County Watch. Earlier this week, Chairman Rose said of the Planning Commission that you talked a lot. And that was a good thing. And that is why I'm here this morning, because you frequently study thorny subjects when no others are willing to do so. I'd like to refer you to a letter you received from North County Watch concerning land use problems occurring among owners in residential cluster subdivisions due to ambiguities and flaws in the ordinance. Homeowners surely would contribute additional concerns. To summarize from the letter, five areas of concern. Open space land use category. Open space parcels created as part of each residential cluster should have a land use category such as open space to avoid confusion as to their purpose. Open space parcel ownership. Open space parcels should not be privatized. The term open space parcel conveys an expectation to the purchasers of the surrounding lots, an expectation that is not being fulfilled. Open space easement in perpetuity. The county should establish and publicize a standard list plus an optional set of restrictions and conditions for each easement. A narrow set of conditions should be established for reconsideration. Covenants, conditions, and restrictions. The county has a continuing responsibility when the county specifies CC&Rs as a condition of approval. The county cannot simply turn their back. Consistency of review. For clarification, Title 22 should be amended to the effect that proposed changes for a development plan and tract map shall require a reconsideration of the whole subdivision. Notwithstanding your demanding workload, is it possible to add this subject to your list of topics worthy of a study session? Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. That's the last speaker slip I have. Moving on to planning staff update. I normally look to my left, but I'm looking to my right. Mr. Hogue, start. What's happening here? Why are you there?
I've got to find the right button first. You know, you move an old dog, and he has a long time learning the new tricks. First, I'll start out by introducing myself. I'm Warren Hogue of the Department of Planning and Building. Is my mic on? Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Okay. We're doing something new today as an experiment. We have moved staff and their supervisor up to that end of the table, so that booted me out of there, and I'm over here now between my esteemed Public Works and Council colleagues, and they probably resent having less space because I take up a lot. And I apologize for that. But we're going to give this a shot. So you're going to need to learn to look at Supervisors Gibson and Ovid, two planning commissioners that would be selected by your commission, and two staff members, planning staff members. They didn't tell us who, but you know, Victor Hollanda, the director, will make that decision. What the board would like is for this committee to meet once or twice, come up with some ideas, have staff summarize them in a white paper, and bring it to the board study session on October 14th. So what we've done, because this happened Tuesday within 72 hours of this meeting, we couldn't put on the agenda your commission selection of the members to be on this committee. But I have added it to the agenda for August 28th. So I just wanted to give you a heads up. You can be thinking about that. On August 28th, we'll be asking your commission to select two of your members. Also, in anticipation that these ideas and this white paper will probably lead to further interest, staff has reserved time for a study session for your planning commission to more thoroughly discuss these ideas. And unfortunately, it's not till December 11th, because quite frankly, that's the first meeting we have that kind of time on. So that's what's happening with that. The other thing I'm pleased to report, because you've asked several times, is when is the board going to consider the letters that your commission sent to them on ag clusters, on including the ag element policies into the conservation element update, and on the wireless communications ordinance and the possible moratorium. That has been scheduled for the board to consider on August 26th. Yes, August 26th. As a board of supervisors item. So your commission can access the staff report for that probably the Wednesday before the meeting, certainly the Thursday, by the online link from the county site. If you need assistance with hard copies, you can let me know and we'll make sure that we get them to you. And you're certainly welcome to come and speak at that meeting. I'm sure the board would like to hear from the commissioners. So that's what I had on staff updates. There has been discussion about scheduling special meetings for Margarita. I don't know if council wants to weigh in on how far that discussion can go today or not.
Well, I think you have to consider the testimony here and the report back later on the 28th.
Okay. So I think any decision about special meetings, council advises that we defer that until August 28th when the item is heard.
Well, I agree we need to defer the decision, but do we need to defer the discussion? I mean, certainly we
I think you do. I think you need to defer the discussion on it until it's a listed agenda item. And it's listed on that time. I think it's inappropriate to discuss items that aren't on the agenda that are in the middle of a hearing like this. So I suggest that you take it up to the 28th when you have the item come back.
So just for my own clarification, because this commission has scheduled special meetings for other topics in years past, and we've just sort of done it, the reason this is different is because it's a hearing item that's already been opened and continued?
Well, technically this would not be a special meeting. It would be an adjourned regular meeting. If the meeting from the 28th is continued to another date, it would be a special meeting in the sense that you'd be adding another date. But from the definition of those two meetings, it would be continuing the 28th to another date and then holding the meeting on that date. But I think that...
But the reality is we would be scheduling a special additional hearing at an irregular date. And I think the concept of whether or not that's a direction we want to go, obviously we want to talk about that.
And I think that needs to be talked at a time when it's on the agenda.
Okay. I had one more question actually for council. And I regret that I don't have my rules and procedures with me, but I was under the impression, oh, and I'm glad to see that Mr. Hogue undoubtedly does, that doesn't the commission have the ability to appoint ad hoc subcommittees at any time? I wasn't aware that that was something that needed to be formally agendized and acted on. For instance, the board did it on Tuesday. They appointed two members, and given the short time frame between now and October 14th, I think it would be advantageous for us to make that determination today so that we could have two additional weeks for whoever is on that committee to participate in the discussion.
I think the
constraint. If we don't appoint a subcommittee until August 28th and they want a white paper before them on October 14th, I'm just thinking about the mechanics of that.
Time is of the essence.
It would appear. And one last question, the August 26th board date to discuss our letters to the board, all three of those items will be discussed as a single item?
I understand they're all wrapped into one item and report.
Thank you.
So the three items, the clusters, the
your speaker. To answer your question, the three items are possibly initiating amendments of the ag cluster policies and the ag open space element, then including the ag element policies in the conservation element update that's currently underway, and then changes to the wireless communications ordinance and consideration of a possible temporary moratorium while those are being processed. So that's, in my mind, three things, not four things, because the last two are related to one another.
Maybe it was just the way you said it just now, but my sense of it was the, referring to the wireless, we're thinking of some changes and maybe not having a moratorium. I would hope that they're not just going to discuss the moratorium, they would discuss the changes.
No. The dog is the ordinance changes, the tail is the moratorium, and the tail doesn't wag the dog. So I think that's clear in the material we gave the board.
Okay. And while we're on planning staff updates, I will disclose, as the newspaper reported, that I did appear at the Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday to talk to the changes. And I found Mr. Hogue's presentation very informative, and I would suggest you ask Mr. Hogue or the secretary or watch it on TV or the internet or however it works for you, because the thing that he described, the changes, in some cases, seemed to be rather minor. There was a couple that he recognized that were bigger changes, and I found that very useful.
We have a PDF of that presentation, and I can forward it to your commissioners if you like.
That would be nice, I think.
Okay.
And I just would like to thank the chair for going down there on his own volition. Speaking on behalf of the commission.
I only spoke on behalf of me.
That's true, but your comments benefited the commission as a whole, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
I had just one more question for Mr. Hogan, commissioners. In response to Ms. Jennings' suggestion that we look at the open space parcel issue and add it to our list of things to discuss or maybe hold a future study session on, I think that would be valuable because we've seen a couple of projects where this has been an issue.
Open space does seem to be an issue.
So I would hope
you're understanding
there would be
it or changing it. Or.
So I would hope there would be support from my fellow commissioners for putting that on a list of possible study session items.
Staff acknowledges that we periodically bring the list of study session wish list, if you will, the commission to prioritize. Now, there is an agenda time to put this on real soon.
Right
after the first of the year would be normally when we'd start that process, start talking about a planning commission retreat, start talking about reviewing the study session wish list, and I'll try to remember to put that on it for discussion.
And while Ms. Christensen is here, I'll tell her that we have this document called the Status of Issues and Study Session Topics that Mr. Hogue keeps up to date, and that's where this thing would or would not be added if you guys chose to do so. Okay.
So I am seeing nods of agreement that that's something we would want to add, so I remember to do that. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Moving on to our consent agenda, which there happens to be nothing on. So going to our hearings, and I will make the announcement that hearing item number four, the last hearing item of the day, the Olson Winery and determination of a general plan consistency and that sort of thing, that application has been withdrawn, so we won't be even opening that or talking about it. That's it. So we just have three items today.
That's correct.
And I'm sorry if somebody came down for that, but Okay, so speaking of three, let's do the first one.
Mr. Rose, there was a gentleman who raised his hand when you made that comment. I don't know if he's got a question for clarification.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, come on up here. You got to give the speaker and give your name for the record. And normally we don't do this, but I understand. I probably should have made that announcement at the very beginning, and I apologize for that. And you could have come up during public comment. So your name is?
My name is Howard Kitkin. We own property next to the Olson property.
It's a staff report. It's a public hearing, and you can give your comments to the hearing officer. He'll consider them. He or she will consider them, and then it will then be acted on, and the decision can be appealed to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay. And how about the, once they receive notice, they'll receive notice, and there'll be certain findings and conditions,
right.
And if you or no one else comments on them saying, I would like a hearing, there will not be the hearing.
Actually, that's true for minor use permits, but for lot line adjustments, which is what this is, there's a hearing no matter what.
Okay.
So they don't have to request a hearing. There will be a hearing. They can just show up and give us their thoughts.
Thanks.
Okay.
Chairman Rose, can you ask him to fill out a slip?
Yeah, sir, if you'd be so kind as to give one of these slips with your name on it so we'll get your name spelled right for the record and that sort of thing. Now we'll move on to hearing item number one. If you could introduce that, Madam Secretary, please.
Hearing item number one is a hearing to consider a request by Grant and Barney for a third time extension for a minor use permit. County file number D010355P, District 4. Elizabeth Cavanaugh is the project manager.
Good morning, Planning Commissioners. Elizabeth Cavanaugh, project planner, along with Stephanie Fuse, who's the name on the staff report. Today you're being asked to review a third time extension request of a formerly approved minor use permit. This minor use permit is essentially allowing four houses and three barns to be built on about 220 acres. Staff is recommending that we approve this third time extension based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B. Our project is located just north of the Lake Lopez area. Here's a graphic for you of the lots that we're building on. They're located in the sensitive resource area for Lake Lopez Viewshed, and special attention has been placed in the siting of these houses and the amount of grading and all the other necessities when we're in a sensitive resource area. There's three lots in this combined to make this site of this minor use permit. Here's parcel one with the small building area there in the corner. Here's a magnification of the building area and some of the impacts. There's trees around this building area. Parcel one has been built on already. So really, the house and the barn that has been proposed on this site has been built. So the remaining two houses and one barn is what we're the continuation of the construction that's going to go on this site. So here's your lot two. There's two houses and a barn proposed on this lot. And lot three. Here's a big version of the lot and a close-up of the footprint of the bill of the one house that will go on this lot. There are special findings required for a third-time extension, and this project does meet the special findings. The first one is that the applicant can complete the site work or the work for circumstances beyond his control. This project on the building on parcels 2 and 3 required building a bridge, which required permits from the Department of Fish and Game, the Army Corps of Engineers, and Regional Water Quality Board. This has been a lengthy process the applicants have been through, and they are near the end of this process and about ready to start building on parcels 2 and 3. Excuse me. The second two findings are regulatory and basically stating that there has been no change to our land use element regarding development on this site and no change to resources or capacity to serve this site. And both of those are stagnant. They've remained as they were back in 2002, I believe, when this project was approved. Again, staff's recommending that you approve this project based on the findings, the third time extension findings, and the conditions in Exhibit B. And I'm available for questions you may have. Thank you.
Jean, questions?
No.
Anyone else?
I just had one question. Originally, there were two applicants, and now there's only one. Is that because of what you were saying initially, that Parcel 1 has already been built up?
You know, I'm not sure about the details on that. I would defer that to the applicants themselves.
Anyone else? Seeing none, this is a public hearing. Is the applicant or the applicant's agent here? Do you wish speaker slips? So we'll put you all in the right order and all that kind of thing. And you can go ahead and speak now, but if you'll be so kind as to fill one out later.
Oh, thank you. My name is Pete Moran. I represent the first lot that there is one building on there, which is the house, and we would like to have a part of this extension to put the barn on there. So there are not two buildings at this time. There is only one, which is the house. And as per the permit use, is that we could put the barn on there, which you had eloquently mentioned in the beginning. So we would like to have this to extend into that. And the other question I would have is, how long do these land use permits last? How many years?
Okay, and the staff will answer that one. Okay, anyone else? The applicant, I presume, has no concluding remarks to make. So I'll close the public hearing and ask staff to answer the question. The two questions.
Sure. Minor use permit is initially approved for 2 years. You get two extensions automatically without going to hearing, 2 one-year extensions for a total of 4 years. To get that fifth year, you need to appear here before this board for the third time extension.
Okay.
And how long do they have to build, assuming they get their extension today? I think that was the question.
You'll need to be built by June 18th, 2009.
Okay.
And by built, you mean?
Sticks in the air.
Sticks in the air, which is essentially the foundation work done and some start on the framing, you know, sticks in the air concept there. And wasn't misunderstood the question about where he could build? No, that wasn't. Okay.
Is it unusual to have a single permit that applies to three different applicants? I don't have a problem with it. I just think it's kind of unusual. I don't recall seeing a similar.
Once in a while we see these. I think all these lots were a part of a lot line adjustment at one time previously, so I suspect that's why they're moving forward together also.
So probably the initial developer wanted to get the permit in place so that there was some control over how the development took place.
Well, because of the sensitive resource area standards for this area, they have to go through a minor use permit to build on these lots, so it made sense, I would assume, to do it together.
So extending this permit today extends the permit on all the buildings, including the gentleman's barn?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. No other questions, discussions, motions?
You want a motion?
Sure.
All right. I move to approve the third time extension to be valid until June 18th of 09 for this minor use permit based on findings in Exhibit A and the conditions adopted by the hearing officer on June 18th of 04.
Second.
Okay, question. I heard staff saying, I heard just what the motion said, valid until June 18th, 2009, but I thought you said they had to build by September. Did I misheard?
No, June 19, 2009 is the date that they need to have sticks in the air by.
I've got September in the brain, I guess. Okay. Okay, any questions? Discussion? Roll call?
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Rappa?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. I might note that in Mr. Hogue's presentation, this was the one thing, this the third time extension for minor use permits, that was going to be proposed to be given were taken away from the Planning Commission and given back to the land use permit hearing officer who heard it in the first place.
And I will note that the justification for that was because of how much time they take up on our agendas in trying to free us up. So it wouldn't necessarily achieve the goal.
I did make that point.
You did, indeed.
Okay. Hearing item number two. Could we introduce that item, please?
Item two is a hearing to consider a request by the Los Osos Community Service District for a development plan coastal development permit, county file number DRC 2007-00181, District 2. Carrie Brown is a project manager.
Yeah, you got new buttons to deal with, too.
Good morning, Carrie Brown, county planning staff.
While you're waiting for your stuff to come up, I know we have a change from the Public Works Department. They're requesting changes to a condition. We have it. I presume the public has it. If not, it's available over to my left there where Ellen's now going to point, or she's looking down at.
But you need it.
Okay.
With that, I will continue. This is the proposed site plan. In August 2002, the district adopted a comprehensive water management plan that identified first priority projects based on existing deficiencies with regards to uniform fire code and California Public Health Department regulations. One of the high priority projects identified is to provide supplemental water to the district. The new well will work in conjunction with the existing lower aquifer well currently operating at the site. The proposed project includes equipping and placing into service a shallow aquifer well. The new well will provide added reliability to the existing water supply system and reduce dependency on withdrawals of lower aquifer water. These withdrawals continue to degrade water quality due to advancement of seawater intrusion in the Los Osos groundwater basin. A mitigated negative declaration was completed for the Los Osos Community Services District's Water Master Plan first priority projects. The construction of two new wells were included in that document. In addition, an addendum to the mitigated negative declaration for the new well and other first priority projects was adopted in May of 2007. The Los Osos Community Advisory Council reviewed the project at their July 24th meeting and recommended support of the project. In conclusion, staff recommends approval of the project based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B. And I'm available for any questions.
Commissioner Wyatt, questions?
Yeah.
Anyone else?
I just had a question. I'm assuming no one's here from Fish and Wildlife Service, given the scarcity in the audience. But I had a question on the Fish and Wildlife Service letter. Their last two paragraphs seemed to contradict one another.
What? Can you tell us?
Oh, I'm sorry. Page 219. In the next to last paragraph, they say that as proposed and described herein, this is not likely to result in the take of a Moro shoulder band snail, which seems to indicate that they're okay with the project. But then in the following paragraph, they're recommending that the CSD suspend any activities that could result in the take of the Moro snail and discuss them with the service. So where is the service on this?
It's my understanding that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is okay with the construction of the new well, but they want the district to do an HCP for operations and maintenance of all of their facilities within Los Osos.
What is an HCP?
Excuse me, a habitat conservation plan. And I believe the district can address this, but they are working towards that goal.
Okay. That was really my only question.
I would agree. Those two seem to be directly in conflict with one another. Gene?
Yes, I have a couple minor questions. In the recommended action number two, you say
based on the findings of Exhibit A and Exhibit B, but I don't see Exhibit B. On page 27, I see an Exhibit C. So do you mean, should that be B?
That should be B.
That should be B. Okay. Then on page 2-9, item condition 20, to invest this permit, substantial site work has to be done, and you go on to say that completion of structural foundation and construction above grade. Well, I don't think there's any, that's a building. I don't think they're building anything. I think they're drilling a well. So I, maybe there's, if I'm correct, maybe there's other appropriate wording that should go in there.
That's general, that's a general condition that we use, and in most of the cases it does apply to a structure. In the case of the well, there will be a well head, but we could change the wording, and I could come up with some revised wording if you...
If I might add on to that, Warren Hogue, the important thing is the reference in the condition to the section of the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance that deals with vesting permits, and there's more language there that would allow us to implement it based on, you know, the fact that this is not a traditional building project. But if you would like to tweak the words in the condition just to make it clear, I don't think there's any objection to that. And possibly Ms. Brown can help you with that.
Is there not going to be a little pump house over the wellhead?
There is an existing pump house that they will be using. There's an existing well on site.
So the well will be within the existing pump house. There's not a new pump house going over the new well?
No.
Well, maybe the applicant can give us the real details and how it's going to look. And before you get
blending in with the existing system and utilizing the existing chlorination facilities that currently are there.
And I presume you're in agreement with the rest of the project conditions?
Yes, we are.
And you've got the new suggested change by Public Works?
I'm not sure.
Maybe Public Works could, at this time, say what it is and why it is.
We decided to change the wording on condition number 6 because the first wording was very vague. It just said all requirements of Public Works, and it sounded too not clear. So simply we added that we changed it to prior issuance of a notice to proceed. The applicant shall obtain an encroachment permit from the Department of Public Works.
Yes,
just to simplify
that.
It.
Okay.
Yes.
Questions for the applicant?
Yes. I am hoping, Mr. Tanaka, that you could just briefly explain maybe the need or difference between the shallow well and the deeper well.
Yes. Their existing well is in a lower aquifer zone that is separated by a clay layer aquitard. That current well is being utilized by the district at this time. One of the things that it does is, as we depend more on the lower aquifer well, then we continue to invite more seawater intrusion, which is one of the concerns out of the community at this point in time. The upper well is that well is approximately, I think, 180 feet deep, and it's situated and screened in the upper aquifer, which is not in hydraulic connection with the seawater intrusion issue. So we would be utilizing this well, the upper well, in conjunction with the lower well to decrease our dependence on the lower aquifer.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Would this be the first shallow aquifer well that the CSD is utilizing?
I believe so. Yes. George, any other? Yeah, it is the first one, yes.
And the issue, of course, with the shallow aquifer is the nitrate contamination.
That's correct.
And so the nitrate contamination is going to be taken care of how?
With blending. So we have done the full, you know, suite of water quality analyses on the well, and it is potable with the exception of the nitrate issues that we are aware of. So we will be blending that water with the lower aquifer water.
So that's just essentially diluting it. You're not treating it in any other
mechanical... That's correct. We are not removing nitrates from the groundwater source. We are blending it with the lower aquifer.
And it'll still meet drinking water standards, and we've gone through the permit process with Department of Health Services as well.
Okay.
For the project.
I'm just kind of curious because Los Osos has had a water problem for so long because they have not tapped into their shallow aquifer because of the nitrate contamination, and it seems that if it's as easy as just drilling a well and blending it with cleaner water, I'm wondering why we didn't do this decades ago.
Yeah. Well, we, as part of the IBANC program, which is funding the work that we're currently talking about today, we had in the plans for another similar type project on Farrell Street, but we had to defer that project. So we were actually planning on doing a second one as well.
And the local Department of Public Health, did you say?
It's actually now Department of Public Health, Department of Health Services.
So this has met the requirements of the state agency that oversees water quality?
Yes,
for community
correct.
Systems, and that's been done. We're not deferring that. That's been done already?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have no speaker slips for anyone from the public to address the commission on this matter, so I'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission for discussion, action.
Well, I guess the discussion here is the question of how much water, then maybe we do need to bring the applicant back, because there is a question here of that issue of the water supply. Are you very limited in how much you can pump from this shallow well? I take it then because of the nitrate issue?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Well, we're just curious with the water supply issue in Los Osos, how much you can pump from this shallow well as opposed to maybe the deeper wells. The speculation up here would be that you're only able to pump a little bit.
That's
and it
correct.
Makes it then.
It's not a big gusher, so to speak. It will be producing, we estimate, based on the pumping tests we've done, about 75 gallons per minute. So it's a fairly small well.
And then that gets blended, a gallon of that gets blended with much more of the lower aquifer.
Right, so the lower aquifer well right now can pump about 170 gallons per minute. And then once we confirm the actual nitrate levels, we will choose a correct blending ratio that makes sure that we have ample, you know, buffer from a water quality perspective. So
has had public meetings on this and discussed this, so the community is well aware of this move.
That is correct. Yeah, it started back from the adoption of the Water Master Plan in 2002. And then this project also has been brought back to the community and to the board through the IBANC program that's funding the project.
All right. Thank you. Discussion? Motion?
If there's no further discussion, I would move then that we consider and rely on the previously approved mitigated neg deck adopted February 20, 2007, and the addendum prepared by the Los Osos Community Service District acting as lead agency. And we approve the development plan DRC 2007-00181 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B with the changes to Condition 6 as read by staff.
And the condition to identify Exhibit C as appropriately Exhibit B.
Well, she said C. She said B.
No, I did just mention the change
sure.
to Condition 6.
I'll second the motion.
Mr. Chair, may I ask the motion maker if she is interested in a revision to Condition 20 regarding vesting the use, because I have some suggested wording if you'd like that.
Oh, sure. That was brought up and dropped, so.
And Carrie may have some too, but I beat her to the punch. So, in condition 20, the first sentence is fine. The second sentence should be replaced with this sentence. And I didn't finish writing it out clear, so bear with me. I'll try to get it out in one fell swoop. This land use permit is considered to be vested once the planning director verifies, in accordance with section 23.02.044, that the use is occurring on the subject site in accordance with all applicable provisions of this title and any adopted conditions. And that's straight out of 23.02.044B in the case where it's not a traditional building project.
Does the motion maker agree with that?
Yes, as long as Gene, who brought the
the issue up is comfortable with that.
And the second?
Yes, I do.
And I'm Jean.
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
All right. So let's have a roll call then.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Milskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. Okay, let's introduce our final hearing item of the day. Love the sound of that.
Item 3 is a hearing to consider request by Greg Nestor Construction and Development for a vesting tentative tract map and conditional use permit. County file number SUB 2007-00110, District 4. Brian Bedrati is project manager.
There we go. Good morning. Brian Bedrati, staff planner. This project is the Vista Roble track map and conditional use permit. The project is a proposal to subdivide a 1.57 acre parcel into 4 commercial parcels, 3 residential parcels, and 1 common area parcel surrounding residential units. In addition, there's a conditional use permit in order to construct 5 commercial units ranging in size from 400 to about 5,200 square feet each, and to construct 3 residential units of 912 square feet each. The project is located at the southwest corner of Teft and Thompson in Old Town Napomo on the east side of Highway 101. It's within the commercial retail land use category in the central business district, and it's surrounded by commercial retail on all sides. The proposed site plan includes the 3 residential units. Teft Street is down here, and Thompson and Burton Street. The 3 residential units are on this side, and they access through on Burton Street. The 5 commercial buildings are located along Teft Street and Thompson. Access to another parking lot is located off of Thompson Avenue. One of the main, site characteristics is the tributary of Napomo Creek, which comes through the property. I understand it's called Haystack Creek. The proposed tract map would divide the project into 5 parcels. It would be 1, 2, 3. And a final view right along Teft Street. And this is we're on top of the culvert in this particular photo. The architectural design of the project incorporates old western elements and a variety of colors and materials. And I'll just run through some of these. These are the commercial buildings. We also have a water tower proposed for the site. And these are the residential units. The elevation kind of shows them as flat, but they are staggered, one behind the other as they go down the line. Some of the issues on the project is compliance with the Old Town Napomo design guidelines, and there's a listing in the staff report from page 3-5 to 3-7 of all those policies and how the project meets each of those policies. In addition, there is the creek, the tributary that runs through the property, issues of drainage and sedimentation and erosion control, which will be standard conditions of approval. There's also the issue of the traffic and the issue of what are the mitigations for the project. The level of service at West Teft Street and Highway 101 interchange basically the addition of vehicles for any project in the area will drop the level of service on that interchange. And so Public Works has worked with the applicant. In addition to the South County circulation fee, the applicant will be doing plan specifications and cost estimate for a future widening of the northerly side of Test Street between Oakland Avenue and the existing Napomo Creek Bridge. And that's condition number 7H on page 3-11. That's an additional mitigation for traffic. Staff has recommended approval of the track map based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B. Approval of the condition to conditional use permit based on the findings in Exhibit C and conditions in Exhibit D. And adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with CEQA. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Questions? Gene?
Yes, I just have one small one. I'm a little confused on these phasing projects, phase 1, 2, and 3. Can they be extended?
Can they be extended as in automatic, or you request a time extension?
Right, time extension.
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'll defer to Warren Hogue.
Establishment of the first phase is subject to making sure that you do it either during the initial 2 years of approval or the 5 years that are available for track map time extensions. Then the other phases have to be established in accordance with whatever their phasing schedule is. And I was looking in the conditions of approval, but I'm not picking it up.
On page 321.
Thank you.
Condition 1, Charlie.
I was looking at the wrong set of conditions.
The first phase is 3 years.
The land use permits that are concurrent with the tract map, their time extensions run with the tract map extensions, in accordance with Title 22. But the conditional use permit can establish a phasing schedule. So the phasing schedule is worded as being from the effective date of this approval, but the track map can be extended more. I mean, you can wait until 7 years to record the track map if you get all the time extensions.
So then that would extend all the phases.
That's a good question as to whether that ability to even start the project then applies to postponing the phasing schedule in 1C. And I'm going to turn to my right instead of looking across the Gulf and see what council has to say.
Well, I would just add that with the new changes to the MAP Act, it's now 2 years plus 6 years.
That's true.
That they have to begin. And as far as the additional phase,
well, I'm hoping council comes up with something. We may have to change the words here.
Well, maybe the applicant could say what he's proposing or what would make sense, but it seems to me that he can't really start constructing until he gets his tract map approved and finaled, and then he could go apply for building permits, because I would assume he may not be building them all. He may sell a lot or two to someone else.
Yeah, that, excuse me. What I'm considering is whether the phasing needs to read from the recording of the final map.
Okay, well, we'll get the applicant to weigh in on this.
And then there might be a difference for the commercial lot, but I'm not sure I have a handle on that yet.
No, that's it.
Okay.
I have a question of staff. Do you have perhaps an overhead that shows the West Teft interchange that is proposed or has been, you know, discussed at length?
Let's see what I have here.
Yeah, kind of an area-wide one would be good.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm interested in is the relationship of this project to, because you indicated it's West Tech, which we all know is West Tech, the problems there.
This map will show it.
This is just a general community map showing the project site. I refer to West Teff Street as the, you know, it's Teff Street, it's East Teff Street, or just Teff Street on the east side of the freeway. But the critical issue is the interchange here. And so projects that would contribute to that interchange would include projects on the west side as well as the east side of
Teff
Street.
That's the part I had never heard before, us including projects on the east side. Is this the first project to be included from the east side?
This is the first project, I think, that Public Works has worked to provide additional mitigation at the West Teff Street interchange that's on the east side. I think all the other ones we've seen have been on the west side.
Then I think my question is for Public Works. Have we or you approved other projects without including them in the interchange?
Not to my knowledge. I believe this is the first one on the east side that
okay.
is being conditioned this way.
And kind of could you just give a little brief summary, because we keep hearing about this and we aren't, I'm not totally sure where you all are in the process.
A summary of how we're developing.
No, I don't need a summary of how. I just need maybe a status report on how the interchange is moving forward.
I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't know the status.
That's it for me.
Other questions for staff?
I'll wait.
Just going back to the interchange, I would presume that east side, west side, it's all contributing to the ball of wax known as that interchange there. And I see you have conditioned them to make some plans, and we just approved one or two or a couple of meetings ago that had a similar thing. So are we asking everybody to do the same thing, and so the first guy with his project gets to do it all, the rest of them, how's that work?
I believe there is a list, is what the Public Works is developing, is a list of mitigations. That there are parts and pieces that we need to get together in order to do the interchange all together. So it's sort of a, it's a list of things that need to happen. And so as the applicant comes in, we provide them with, you know, you could do the PS&E, you could do the, there's different parts.
Is
plan, specs, and estimates
Thank
for
you.
The various parts of this interchange project. And then they, and maybe Mr. Nestor can clarify, but they almost get to choose which one they want to do, and that's how we come up with the mitigation. We're using a rather creative situation here because a lot of what happens at the interchange is based on Caltrans. And funding, and we're kind of at a standstill, so we're getting creative with ways to, allow these projects to go forward while still getting what we need in order to do the interchange project.
And these are in addition to the
road improvement
normal, fees and traffic mitigation that's
yes.
required.
Yes, exactly.
Some
Are we doing this anywhere else in the county?
No. I believe it's related all to Teff Street. I don't know that we have this situation. This is sort of a unique situation. We're at a level F of service on Teft, and there's nothing more that we can do.
Assuming that there was some right-of-way to acquire.
You know, Bob, the applicant's kind of shaking his head yes and no. Maybe he can kind of fill us in.
Okay, so he'll fill us in on that, but the acquiring all the permits, that means go to Caltrans and get the okay?
Let's see here. I can't say for sure. I'd have to get back to you. I'm not that familiar with what exactly. It does, from reading this, it would infer that he does need to get the necessary permits and right-of-way to do this project. He's going to get the plans, he's going to get the specs and the estimate together, as well as the right-of-way, but he does not need to actually do the construction of this portion of the work. He's just getting the plans, specs, and estimate, and any right-of-way and any permits.
And all these permits and plans got to be approved by Caltrans, which you've said, and as have others, is kind of a lengthy process.
Well, the portion of Test Street between Oak Glen and the Pomo Creek Bridge is actually county-maintained, so that portion would be okay. Reviewed by County Public Works.
Well, that's good. Okay. Okay, more questions for staff?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I've got a few questions. The land use category for this parcel is commercial retail, and residential development is allowable under commercial retail?
That's correct. It is intended to be incidental or less than the commercial.
So then my question goes to the phasing. Constructions of buildings D and E are going to be the first ones constructed. And I know D was one of the commercial uses, but what's E, that little small parcel in the corner?
That's commercial as well.
Okay. And then the three residences are the next in line to be constructed within 5 years. And then the last three commercial buildings are built last. So my question is relative to the incidental nature of the residences. I mean, the only reason I'm thinking this way is because we've seen it happen elsewhere in this county, that when we approve a, quote, sort of mixed-use project, sometimes where the residential is wholly separated from the commercial, the residential gets built and then the commercial doesn't. So I'm wondering if it might be more appropriate, given the fact that the residential use needs to be incidental to the commercial use, that we might consider flipping the phasing of 2 and 3. Would staff have any thoughts on that?
Well, the
I turned your thing off.
I guess I'll start with I talked with Mr. Hogan. At least on the timing of the phasing of construction, in order to keep that construction phasing in line with the allowable constraints on the number of extensions you can get up to 8, really the change on that condition would need to be. Basically, under condition 1C, that phase 2 would be construction of the residential units within 8 years. Sorry, page 3-21.
I can amplify on that if I might, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. The commercial part of the project can occur at any time. It's not dependent on the track map. The residential part does need the track map. So phase 1 and phase 3 are commercial. So when that starts construction, it's up to your discretion as part of approving the conditional use permit part of this project. Phase 2, the residential part, is the one where the time frame should be modified to match what is allowed under the map back now for recording final maps, and that's now a total of 8 years with this new legislation.
But the issue with the MAP Act, I see it as a separate issue from the question of the residential being incidental to the commercial use. And my concern is that if we don't require the commercial use to be built, or at least some substantial portion of the commercial use to be built before the residential uses can be built, that we might run afoul of the requirement to have the residential use be subordinate to it.
You're absolutely right. That's not a...
But what's being proposed is 10. And so I'm wondering why there's double the required amount of parking. 10 spaces seems like a lot of spaces for 3 units.
It could be. I'd probably defer to the applicant on the proposal. Obviously, they met the minimum requirement, but we could defer to the applicant to identify the reason for the number of spaces.
So I'll wait to get the answer to that one. And then the 15-foot setback from the top bank of the creek, that just seemed like not very much of a setback to me, given creeks, knowing creeks as I do. Is that a standard in the Old Town Napomo design plan, or is that a broader standard in the...
It's specific in the Old Town Napomo design plan to the tributary, to this particular tributary. There's a different setback for the Napomo Creek. But yes, that's where the standard is written.
Has there been much development that's taken place under that standard? Has there been much 15-foot setback development?
Not to my knowledge. There may have been, but...
So we don't know if it's been an issue or not, because it hasn't been really applied much. Okay, and then the third thing is more of a comment than a question, and I did note that you were not the staff person who was identified as the contact person, so perhaps this was prepared by another staff person, but... When the staff report goes through the planning area standards and it states the various policies or refers to the various policies, the staff report just goes on to make a statement that, you know, as designed or as conditioned, this meets the standard without actually saying what the standard is. And that's something that we've talked about on this commission in years past. And most of the staff reports that have come through in the last, you know, 18 months or so have been pretty good about saying what the standard is and then explaining the rationale for why it's consistent. But it's just a little more difficult to track policy consistency when we don't have the policy to reference. So that's just a comment. I hope we're not sort of sliding back into that, because I thought we'd sort of taken care of that from a process perspective already. So that's all my questions and comments for now.
Anyone else? Well, I've got a request for a break here, so the 10:11, we come back at 10:25 and we'll go to the public comment, the applicant, and all the members of the audience here. Okay, back at 10:25. Okay, are we ready? Ready, and the video booth is ready. I'll call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission back to order, and it was time to open up public comment on the project in Napomo. Mr. Nestor, you're up, sir.
Good morning, Greg Nestor, local builder and developer. I appreciate the conversations this morning. My questions on the staff report were identical to yours. I didn't understand when the clock started. I guess in my experiences, the clocks start when the map records, and everything would follow that. That's what my expectations were as a result of the discussions today. To let you know where the phasing ideas came from, I've been involved in the mapping entitlement of mixed-use projects that have not been able to begin because of some of the mechanics of it. We've taken this project and divided it more horizontally rather than vertically so that we can successfully build it out, borrow monies, and test market absorption incrementally rather than with one trigger. And that's where the lot design and the individual standalone buildings come from. It's my intention to build out, have, and hold all the properties as long as that's the right thing to do. And, of course, things change. But that was the goal in purchasing and mapping and developing of this property, was to create long-term rents so that when people don't want to buy houses like right now, people like me can survive. So anyway, D&E is the corner components and the frontage that passes along Thompson. To open up business for D&E, it would require that we do the improvements that are needed on Thompson. Uses were there Another thing I want to point out is that the implementation of the build-out of D&E represents over 50% of the gross commercial footage that's being proposed on the site. So that commitment is pretty substantial in the priorities that are laid out to date. Basically, this project is set up to where we don't have one trigger. It can be done in a linear fashion. I don't want to be there 8 years from now building out those buildings, but I do want to be one of the people that do start a positive direction for Old Town Napomo, and this is the key intersection, in my opinion, that will spur that. The town burned down in 1911 through that area, and it just hasn't came back very strong since, and this is my effort to participate in executing the downtown Old Town plan. We have secured our water rights and sewer rights for the project, so those are in place with a timely enough manner to meet the final mapping process and go to construction. Regardless of a lot of the economic conditions that we are experiencing in land development, because of the commercial nature and location and the lack of certain offerings in Napomo, it is my intention to build D&E upon approval. From there, I think that a site visit might help understand a little bit more about drainage. The Haystack tributary has had a lot of county improvements done to it prior to my ownership, bank stabilization, and a number of substantial storms that have occurred since that, with no substantial erosion, mostly just collection of trash that came from upstream that was cleaned out. There is easements proposed on the map that allow the county and heavy equipment to access the abutment areas to the bridge and underpass that passes through the Teft and Burton intersection there. From that standpoint, this project doesn't call out for retention basins. All of the discussions that I've been a party to with county and civil engineers, that this is a project where a quick release of water into the tributary is the best methodology so that it gets down into its primary exiting path, which is in Napomo Creek, rather than hold that and allow the upstream to meet that at the same time and add to peak flows. So the logic is being applied to having a quick release of the on-site waters to that tributary to get them downstream quicker. Other than that, I'm available for questions. And I guess secondly, I don't think we're near 15 feet up on the bank when we get the site plans out and study those. I think we have exceeded the 15 feet in all locations there. We do have sensitive pervious areas proposed for our parking that do get closer to the creek area with respect to understanding that any environmental issues that exist there.
Questions?
I agree with Mr. Nestor that the old town, the busiest...
Did you make
oh,
there?
My goodness.
Yeah.
The busiest place in Old Town right now is Jocko's, right across the street. So people can come early, park in Jocko's lot. If there's an overflow, go over and spend money on the commercial part and then go back and have dinner at Jocko's afterwards. So hopefully this might spur the Old Town development and get the rest of it going further towards the freeway also. I applaud Mr. Nestor on having a project that the South County Area Council had no comments. He's worked very closely with them and gotten all of the issues resolved, and I think this is the first time that's ever happened. So I applaud him in that respect. So other than that, the only downside I see is a big pepper tree that's going to have to go out, I guess. It's a beautiful-looking tree, but the replacement landscaping will probably be more appropriate and than the big pepper tree that's there. So other than that, I have no other questions or comments.
I just have a question. What is
and your mic.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. What is your understanding of the improvements that will be necessary as far as the West Teft interchange or the Teft Street interchange, 101 interchange?
Well, that was the second issue that drew my attention to the staff report as one of the conditions. Enhance flow there, regardless of even widening the bridge, that would help today. So I do recognize that. I'm not sure that I would be in a position to acquire easements on those properties. That was the first question that I asked after reading the condition to provide plans. I was curious how I would even be empowered to acquire those easements for the county. So I don't picture myself actually gathering those easements. Being involved in development for a number of years, that is one of the most challenging components, I will comment, for gathering right-of-ways for people that do or don't want to or are not motivated to release those properties. So my understanding is that I'm going to draw plans.
But as it stated in our staff report, and it says the PSE shall be inclusive of acquiring all necessary permits and right-of-way, comma, if necessary to certify the final project to the Department of Public Works. My interpretation of that condition is that is on you.
Well, I guess I would have to refer to Public Works and Engineering to understand that that is actually the mechanical process that I'm to follow. In talking to Dale Ramey, who is the proponent of this condition, I did not understand that I was going to actually be acquiring those easements. I was going to be drafting, proposing, creating the legal documents, but not the actual acquisition. If I'm to acquire those, this project and all the time frames could expire before I even get to work on it. So that is a dangerous point that I would hope for positive clarification.
Other questions?
Yes, but do you want to follow up on that? I see Public Works
ready to
weigh in.
Let's get the public testimony in, and then we'll
deal with that one.
Okay. We'll deal with it.
Yes, I had a few questions for Mr. Nestor. One, I don't see a finish. I see a letter from Parks to Mr. Nestor, our staff report 103, about a Thompson Trail, Thompson Corridor Trail. So I didn't hear any mention of that. If you
know that,
follow up.
That was an area condition that was applied to our project. We had an on-site meeting with Jan DeLeo, and once she understood that all of the public sidewalks were to be installed around the perimeter, that met the standard.
Okay, so that the sidewalks, so it was kind of some kind of walking corridor or something.
That's correct.
That the sidewalks deal with, okay. And another question I have then is a little more detail about the common area features. We see a set aside a common area lot of 15,000 square feet, and we see a lot of, thank you for the great detail of benches and lighting and signage and great attention to that detail. I just wasn't sure exactly what that common area lot is or incorporates. That may incorporate some of Commissioner Christie's question about parking for
sure.
The private units.
Well, the thought behind that is that if indeed the property wasn't held by my firm or my sons or whoever's next, that if there was individual ownership of the lots that housed and carried the buildings, that it wouldn't be left to those individuals collectively to maintain and upkeep the property as the initial vision was put together. So I wanted that to be held separately so that a single maintenance entity would be able to take care of that. Not a whole bunch more logic separate from that.
And so that lot, though, incorporates the parking, the 10 residential parking spaces, and the creek setback.
I guess it's part of my question. I was just unclear from the site plan exactly what's there as far as common areas for the residential units, because it is one item of concern we've heard repeatedly from the Area Advisory Council, sort of outdoor areas for residents of mixed use or higher density developments. So I didn't see any detail as to what's provided then for outdoor areas within the site for those three residential units.
Well, you can study the plan and recognize that there is some considerable land area that projects towards the east, kind of a triangular function, and it butts up to the Haystack tributary, and that is the outside space. And I guess I'm a little bit curious, too, of why we are overparked there, according to code. I do believe that my staff...
Table or...
No, I appreciate you recognizing that. There is space for that, in my opinion, and I would be happy to incorporate that.
Because I think that is something we've heard the Advisory Council wanting to see, and so quite possibly there's an opportunity then, if it's currently overparked, maybe to take a little of that surface and make some kind of picnic area.
You're right, yeah.
Some kind of... But you would be amenable to that, that would probably meet those needs.
I would, and I would promote the triangular space to the east. If it was my kids, I'd want them further from the street and the parking, so maybe that's an appropriate area for that.
And I guess since the Advisory Council didn't have specific comments, they must have felt like what you have incorporated is adequate, but if there would be any opportunity, I guess, to add to that through reduced parking, that would be something maybe
sure.
We could talk about wanting to see.
I'd be happy to accommodate
okay.
that.
Okay, and another question I had then is regarding noise protections for the residential units. I didn't see, it looks like we have a noise survey that showed sounds for the residential units would be under the decibel limit. But I was just curious if you might be amenable to adding a few more noise protection elements for the residential residents that we see in some of our other projects that I don't think would add a huge cost but might protect for those residents a bit from sound, such as a few basic things, solid panel doors and double paned windows, because I do think the mixed use creates some opportunity for sound issues. And those
well,
might be some simple ones.
I agree with you, and hence the horizontal design rather than the vertical design in regards to mixed use. So we tried to separate them in that regards and find space in between them. And they are butted to existing residential, but those type of features would be more than agreeable. That's our standard for construction, so we'd be happy to do that.
Okay, if we did condition those things in.
That would be very reasonable.
That would work. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Nestor. You mentioned that you had secured water and sewer service to the property. I may have missed it. I didn't see a will serve letter in the packet or a condition that you obtain one. So you're telling us today that you have received that already?
Only a can and will, or only an intent to serve at this time. That's all you can get at this phase of construction.
But you do have an intent to serve.
Yes.
And then there's been some discussion of the abandonment of a portion of Teft.
That's correct.
Can you describe where and why that abandonment is taking place?
Well, there are some document pictorials in your package, if it's the same as mine. And when Teft Street was designed, I think there was a blanket logic applied to it from Thompson to the Napomo Bridge. So there was a uniform width of that right-of-way that continued down the whole corridor. The difference between the whole corridor and this particular piece is that we do not have angled parking areas that turn into the parking spaces that parallel the front of the build-out of this project. We have a right-hand turn lane that peels off of the through lane, and that the construction of that is fractional to the angled parking area. Then next you go and you study the Old Town plan that's been approved since 99, and it talks about their desired setbacks from face a curb and the connectivity to the street and the walkability and the frontages along the buildings and the street. With that in mind, if we were to stick with the setback as it is, we would move those buildings back, I believe it's about 15 to 18 feet. And that
move them back from the street?
From the street, without the abandonment of that right-of-way that's there. One that wouldn't necessarily conform with the Old Town Plan's goals, and it would create what might almost be a little bit of an odd landscaping area, because I wouldn't be able to do improvements in those areas.
So basically, just to summarize, I think what I heard you say is that because there's no opportunity to have angled parking along that section of Teff Street, we don't need an easement that wide, and therefore you're reclaiming some of that easement for purposes of landscaping buffering for your development. Is that...
That is correct. My first goal, even though it was expensive, was to request that we do the angled parking. I wanted it to look like someone was there at our commercial facilities, and that seems to breed more curiosity. At the same time that I do D&E, and D&E would require that I also do the improvements along Thompson that have not been completed with the Teff Street corridor improvements. When you get to the mechanics of building that, there's no economy in stopping the few spaces that would be needed there. So any conditions or anything that wanted to impose the idea of building out the entire parking lot with D&E are my intentions, and would be happy to agree to that.
Yeah, your point is well taken about the economy of doing it all at once. My concern is that you had mentioned that you're not entirely certain that the commercial activity in the community will be absorbed by the structures that you're building, and in which case A, B, and C may not get constructed, or may not get constructed for a long time. And then I'm just picturing an enormous parking lot for two small commercial structures, and wondering about the sort of the ratios there.
Well, I guess I can't imagine that they won't be absorbed. I just can't imagine which day they'll be absorbed. So that's I am an optimist, or I wouldn't be here. So I hadn't thought about it that way. I couldn't imagine not building those out. And secondarily, just for further understanding, part of the economics that I'm enduring are associated with lending. Having multiple lots and being able to have separate loans on individual buildings is a lot easier to sell. So another one of the drivers behind the separate lots is so that I can finance it incrementally, and hoping that that adds to the success of the project with a linear build-out.
Yeah, understood. You had mentioned in response to Commissioner Wyatt's questions about the common area, that another entity will hold the maintenance agreement for that portion. Who do you envision that entity being?
That would be myself.
So you're going to personally maintain the area?
That's right. We'll have an LLC formed that would be the have ownership of that and all the properties that were not sold off. I don't intend to sell any, but in the event that that was needed or the right thing to do, that same LLC would hold and maintain that.
And you had also mentioned the desire to do some creek restoration to make that a more attractive area, which I think is a terrific idea. I didn't see any conditions relative to creek restoration in the permit. I'm assuming you'd be okay with some mention of creek restoration activities?
Well, I would hope that the landscape plan that you do see on the board now is representative of that. That was the intention, that we would be using all natives and riparian type plant-like in that area. We have to be careful when we talk about creek restoration. I met with Fish and Game. They referred me to the county as the lead agency. They said if I followed the setback criteria that's set forth, that they're not to be involved in that. For at this point, I'm not working within the creek boundary within that 15 feet other than plant restoration on the top surface. Disturbing the top of bank is the threshold for triggering fishing game permits. Our project is designed to not disturb that threshold, as that might be a challenging thing to overcome. With all the work that the county has done there, we feel like the actual bank is stabilized. One of the things that we did at the very beginning of the project was employ Earth Systems to visit the site and study and establish the stability of the bank. One of the reasons that I own this property is, rather than looking at that tributary as a negative or a liability, I looked at it as a positive component that would create a component of atmosphere to the parcel, rather than one that doesn't have some topography or features that pass through it. It's not my intent to go down into the creek or breach the bank and do improvements that way, but right to top of bank, as our discussions included with the fishing game.
I guess I would just encourage you to maybe, I love your line of reasoning, looking at the creek as an asset and not a liability, and I'm just guessing, but probably we don't have the will today to add conditions relative to creek restoration on this permit, but I love your line of thinking, and I would encourage you to apply that line of thinking to the Department of Fish and Game as well, and rather than going, ooh, stream bed alteration permit, but the gross area for the parking as well.
You bet. I would be happy to conform with the code. There's no special logic there.
Okay, great.
No more questions?
I just have one more, and this is to help familiarize me with the area. There is a lot of creek restoration that's going on that whole east side. And I'm sorry, is this part of that, or was it part of the future? I mean, I know the county and the Land Conservancy have all been working in this entire area.
They have been. This one was done previous to my ownership. So there, if you do visit the site, you'll see a lot of bank work that's been done there, and the abutment that's been done. Just up from this, there is a project that's scheduled in the near future that will go underneath Thompson and enhance the flow through there. And I believe that there'll be some things that might help catch some of the trash that passed through that area, but it's not, my piece does not have any further scheduled improvements to the creek as of today,
okay,
to my
thanks.
Knowledge. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Michael Wynn, and that's the only speaker slip.
Good morning, Chairman Roos, Commissioners. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm from Napomo. This is a highly blighted area. This has been blighted for a long time. Just a quick thumbnail history. The town burned down in the 1890s. Hotels, saloons, livery stables, blacksmith shops, businesses, all but one church, everything gone. It was turned into a wasteland. Further, in 1939, the Pacific Coast Railway, which used to go from San Luis out through Santa Maria and on further south, went out of business when the SP Railroad went through Guadalupe and came into San Luis a different route. And so things fell through even further. Last, in 1952, Highway 101, which used to be Thompson Road, built a new highway further west, abandoning the old highway, which is why, by the way, Ms. Rappa, that's why they call it West Teft, even though it's east of the freeway. It was west of 101 when the old highway came through. And there's a nomenclature change that would be very helpful, I think, and that maybe you'll look at some other time. The turnaround began when the community really got organized in the 1990s. Peg Miller, a lot of people got together. There were large groups. They formed an Old Town Napomo Association, and the Old Town Design Plan was approved by the Board of Supervisors in 1999. We scrambled for money every place we could find it. We got from the soups, we got from STIP funds, we got APCD funds, Guadalupe mitigation funds, PG&E undergrounding funds, on and on and on. And $3.5 million, and we were able to put in curbs, gutters, sidewalks, antique street lights, street furniture, whole range of things, trying to turn this area around. That was completed in 2003. Not a single project has broken ground since. So for all of that community energy and for all that public expensive money, we've had no increase in the tax base there at all, and that's not a way to do things. This is the first project that's come along that really offers to change, to turn the corner. Mr. Nestor has been through the advisory council many, many times, and as you saw, their letter was surprisingly non-negative. They've been through the Old Town Napomo Association. Their design group have been over it many times. And by the way, there were suggestions made and adopted in the design that you see now. They've come before the agency I represent, Napomo Community Services District. They have an intent to serve letter. So I think they've done all the things that you could hope people would do. And now we need you to approve the vesting tentative map and the conditional use permit. I hope you'll do that today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Nestor, I see no other speaker's lips. You have any concluding remarks? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission.
Chairman Rose, I see Jan DeLeo is here from Parks, so maybe she could come up and just address the Thompson Trail issue a little more detail.
I'm Jan DeLeo with County Parks, and I heard my name. I was listening to the item on my computer, and Mr. Nestor expressed it how it happened. We met on site to look at the opportunity for a trail that would go up Thompson Road, realizing that for equestrians to go up Thompson Road would be very difficult. We said the sidewalk would solve the issue for pedestrians, and then bicycles will have to decide whether they're going up Thompson Road or an alternative route. But I think what we're trails plan, it shows a trail corridor going down Thompson Road. So as development goes east of Thompson Road, which will probably be a long time away, we would look at extending any trail corridor in the vicinity of Teft and Thompson east and come around and hit Thompson Road again when it's more rural. Because in the developed area, that's kind of a downtown area, there's just nowhere to put an equestrian corridor. So in either case, it's a long way off, is the, I guess, the bottom line.
So you'd just be routing away from the commercial part of Old Town Napomo on...
Right, figuring that equestrians, there's nowhere to go, aren't going to want to ride in the downtown necessarily.
So you're in flux then on all these trails that where they may end up eventually.
Well, what we do too is we normally we look at them as multi-use trails where we're trying to provide for bicycles, equestrians, and people walking. And sometimes we split them up. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that are interested in walking in the downtown, and the bicyclist that's interested in getting from point A to point B will bicycle in the downtown. But in terms of the more recreational rural area, it's more logical that equestrians and maybe the more recreational bicycle route would go in the more rural areas as they develop. Again, they're not going to happen today or tomorrow, but should Napomo change and those areas become more developed with residences or whatever, then we would try to implement those pieces for the equestrian and the maybe the Class 1 bicyclist.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Now, bring it back to the commission for questions and response, public comment. The Public Works, did Mr. Nestor adequately describe the abandonment issue?
I had a little clarification on that, and the way the condition is written, it is the intent that he would obtain the permits and the right-of-way. He isn't going to actually be building any of the improvements. But one of the things with the right-of-way is that there's already a lot of right-of-way along Taft in that area, and that it's believed that maybe the improvements that are needed can be within the right-of-way. Maybe walls can be down along, and it's only on the north side of Taft that he's preparing the plans. This isn't for the whole portion of Test Street from Oakland to the bridge. It's just the north side. So if, for some reason, he's not able to obtain that right-of-way, the board can direct us to go through abandonment proceedings, and we would obtain it that way. But the intent was that he would try to get the right-of-way.
Like you did with the Templeton, where you had to complete Bennett Way, and the property owner wasn't amenable to it, and ended up in court. And I just see that added to an expense that he's perhaps not ready to fund.
Well, and it also involves a third party that no one has, you know, real whatever. They're not. You can't control a third party. I mean, this is. I'm sorry.
County council's going to weigh in there.
County Council, the MAP Act provides that you can require reasonable on-site and off-site dedications of right-of-way, and if the applicant is unable to acquire that right-of-way, the MAP Act has a provision where it can ask the county to condemn it, and then the applicant would fund the acquisition of the right-of-way. So the point is, if you require off-site offers of dedication that are reasonable, and the applicant is unable to acquire them through negotiation, there's an opportunity to request the county to condemn it and enter into an agreement to pay for that. And that's what we did up at Templeton that you referred to, and also Oak Shores.
But doesn't the county hold the easement currently? I mean, isn't the county the entity that... I mean, I don't understand who the third party is. It's the county.
Well, if there are no right-of-way that needs to be acquired, then this says acquiring all necessary permits and right-of-way if necessary. If there's already right-of-way the county has, there wouldn't be a problem.
I guess maybe I'm confused in the difference in the terminology, because on page 3-9, it's... the heading is road abandonment, and it's talking about the proposed abandonment of a portion of Teff Street.
No, we're not there. We're talking different.
I think if you look at the map, this map right here, you can easily see what the road abandonment is about, and I think that's a little bit different.
That's different.
I can clarify.
She didn't answer my question. She went off on another.
I can clarify. The abandonment that you're talking about on page 3-9 relates to abandon the improvements, but that was the intent.
So is there a way to change the wording to make that intent more clear? Some kind of different wording? I do think the wording isn't so clear as to that intent. Maybe there's a way to clarify that with the wording by changing it, if that's indeed the agreed upon.
I don't see where it's confusing. I think it's rather clear-cut. I think it's putting quite a burden on Mr. Nestor, maybe, because we don't know if...
Well, what if the wording was just changed instead of the PSE shall be inclusive of acquiring, the applicant shall be required to include all necessary permits in right-of-way? And it just seems like this came up, so it must not be perfectly... If it was perfectly clear...
I'm having trouble understanding.
You brought it up.
Yeah, I don't understand your reasoning.
Well, it just seemed like there was some...
No. What's your proposal?
Wasn't so clear.
What are you
proposing? Well, if that second sentence then...
Not
is
if.
H.
What is the proposal you want?
Well, I don't know that it's more clear, but it would seem to me possibly to be more clear to say something like the applicant would be required to acquire all necessary permits and right-of-way if necessary to construct the project, rather than the PSE shall be inclusive of acquiring.
Hmm. Well, you know, I guess...
No. I don't know if that makes it more clear or not. That would seem more clear to me, but I see other...
Okay, I'm getting your point now.
The PSE shall be inclusive of acquiring, blah, 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 doesn't seem to me the most clear language.
Okay.
And it has come up.
I get you. Good point.
The applicant asked the question, and someone here...
I see your point now, because... He needs to make a plan, specification, and cost estimate. That's a piece of paper, which will have a bottom line on it.
So now the piece of paper shall be inclusive.
Right. Now, on this piece of paper, you got to have all the permits And the right-of-way, it doesn't say you have to buy any right-of-way.
Well,
it just has to identify it.
Exactly.
Well,
acquiring.
But it says acquiring.
But it says the PSE shall be inclusive of acquiring, which seems to me not the most
How could a
clear.
Piece of paper
it's,
do anything?
Yeah, the piece of paper isn't doing anything. It's the applicant who apparently we want to be doing something. So
the PSE does describe the area. That's one the thing that it does do is describe the specific area of Teff Street between the bridge and Oak Glen Avenue.
So the PSE described the area, and the applicant acquired necessary permits.
Would that
be somehow more clear?
I see that as more clear, but I don't necessarily know that it gets to the core of the issue that we're asking the applicant to acquire something that we really don't have any idea what it is or who he'll be dealing with and whether or not it's even feasible. It's much more clear. But
well, that's the bigger question
than
whether we indeed want to require him to do that.
Well, I for one don't. I think that I'm not sure that I've ever heard the word, quote, voluntary, but we have property owners who are willing to participate in improvements to Teft and 101, even though the entire, quote, project has not been totally analyzed. And, you know, there's all kinds of things. And this is on top of already being required to do the normal traffic mitigation and improvements and everything. In the spirit of encouraging others to participate in this voluntary type approach, I would suggest we remove that sentence.
The last sentence?
The last sentence.
Yeah, the reason I'm uncomfortable with that sentence as well is because I'm uncomfortable that staff would impose a requirement without fully understanding what was entailed in the requirement. And the concept of requiring an applicant to acquire something from a third party sets up a situation for potential extortion. I mean, we don't know who owns what right-of-ways there, but if some person owned a right-of-way and understood that Mr. Nestor had to purchase the easement in order to proceed with his project, it's conceivable that he or she could charge a price far in excess from what that easement would actually be worth. So I don't think it's been thought out entirely, and I don't think it's fair to the applicant. So I would support. I don't know anything about getting people to voluntarily comply with this long-term vision, but I just don't think it's fair to the applicant. So I would be in favor of striking it.
I'd just like to hear from staff, I guess, before we proceeded on that.
I think it is. It's definitely, you can take that. If there we had some more information, we might be able to make a more rational judgment there. But I understand what you're saying about, you know, the need for planning to take into consideration the future easement needs of that area. So couldn't we reword that sentence to say that the PSA shall, rather than be inclusive of inquiring, but just that the PSA shall reflect the need for future easement acquisitions or something along those lines so that the planning still tracks without putting the burden on the applicant to acquire the...
Doesn't the first part say that?
Wait a minute,
not according to staff.
So let Gene get... Gene's trying to say something.
Couldn't we just say that the PSA be developed on approval by the Public Works? I mean, you guys give the last word on it.
Well, they're going to have to.
Yeah.
Right, because I think the first part of 7 says improvement plans and submitted to the Department of Public Works. That's, you know, and condition H, it's already, that's a given. They're going to, the plans will come through Department of Public Works for approval.
Okay.
So we probably don't need to state that.
Okay,
taking Commissioner Christie's idea and putting it to actual words, I would leave it as is. The PSE shall be inclusive of acquiring all necessary permits and identification of necessary right-of-way if necessary to construct the project. So it's going to identify it.
Okay.
But he doesn't have to go out and buy it.
Okay. So the PSE shall be in,
inclusive of identifying all necessary permits
in
right-of-way? Do you want them to acquire the permits?
Acquire the permits.
And identify the right-of-way.
And identify the right-of-way.
Required.
And identify required.
What if he can't...
Right-of-way.
If the person applying for the permit is not the property owner, they need, I believe, the authorization from the property owner to do this. I mean, you see, so when you're, it seems so simple, but it isn't quite that simple.
Yeah. Okay.
So, my preference is still to delete the sentence. But if others feel that the you know, acquiring the permits and the right-of-way somehow is the applicant. I don't get the difference. I don't know, and I really would like to hear Public Works explain why we're doing this, because what we have been told is that it is kind of a voluntary program, that applicants come in and they are not required to participate. But everybody, in trying to resolve a very serious situation, have agreed to participate. And maybe you're just not familiar with it, but we've certainly heard it a number of times.
I believe that the applicant has to do something to mitigate the added traffic to that interchange, which is or to the level F service. If there is some other way that he can mitigate his impact, then that would be allowed. Without him doing this separate set of plans for this section, there apparently has not been a way to mitigate that impact that his project is going to have. And that's similar for all projects that come in and could impact the traffic on Teff Street.
But those mitigations are set up through a previously adopted traffic program, which we all know exists, and that's why we have traffic fees or public work fees to address it. This, at least from my understanding from the projects we've seen in the past, this is above and beyond because there aren't totally identified mitigations. So you can't, by law, require it. But everybody really wants to see the problem solved and is willing to participate.
Okay, I'm going to
chime in.
Yeah.
Just an overall view, it's really a CEQA issue in some ways, because the mitigations that are in place, you know, prior to this time were based on impacts that were going to occur. This is basically an impact at the interchange, which was identified in the initial study. Mm-hmm. As an impact that can't be mitigated through what we've done in the past, the fees and whatever improvements they would do on site. And so that impact has been identified in the mitigated negative declaration, and the PSE is that's a condition or a mitigation specifically for that impact.
Okay, I'm going to agree with you, but I'm agreeing with Commissioner Rapa about getting rid of the last sentence, because I'll go to page 368. Seems like that does say, well, it's got to be 17 feet wide, and we've only got 15 feet here, so
yeah.
Going to have to come up with two more feet, and it's going to need a permit from whomever, and that all has to be laid out.
Public Works will ensure that.
Right.
But my question to Public Works staff is, do you feel like it's important to include the identification of those rights of way? Just the identification of them, not the acquisition of them.
I agree. I think that to strike that sentence altogether would not be prudent. However, the sentence that Chairman Rose came up with would be good, to say that the PSNE shall be inclusive of all necessary permits and identifying the required right-of-way.
Yeah.
That way... If that's more comfortable for you to not have him actually obtain the right of way, but that it would be included and shown on the plans, that would be.
Would it not serve the purpose to just say the PSE shall identify then? all necessary permits and right-of-way?
No. Because Commissioner Rappa made the point that Mr. Nestor may not be able to get a permit because Joe Blow actually owns where this permit is going to be. And I think she's probably right.
Yes, I think we all agree to that. I don't hear anyone
disagreeing. Okay, so
we want it identified.
Yeah.
So the point is to make that second sentence clear that we want those things identified.
Don't you think the first one, which talks about the future widening, does that?
Well, no, we hear Public Works telling us maybe not. So what's wrong with, if that's what we want, let's be clear about saying we want this identified.
Okay, and so now my new language is going to be the PSC shall identify all necessary permits and
right-of-way
to be acquired if necessary
to construct the project. Perfect,
that's fine. Okay.
That seems simple.
I'm here in agreement.
Okay.
Read it once again. The PSC shall identify all necessary permits and right-of-way to be acquired if necessary to construct the project.
And just a word to staff, I am not fundamentally opposed to the concept of a condition that requires an applicant to acquire something or obtain something, but for future reference, when staff is going to make a recommendation like that, I think it's important that whatever that thing is be identified, specifically called out as to whatever it is and what the potential cost is going to be.
Okay, we got, and I agree with you. Okay, we got that done. What about parking? What are we going to do that? Parking.
I think we should reduce it down to 6.
Well,
what's required? 5.5?
5.5.
Well, then, let's reduce it to 6 and put more area in the common ground. Yeah.
And the condition to make that happen is listening staff.
We could put that under number 3C, Brian Pedrotti staff.
Page what?
3C.
310.
Number page 310, I believe.
Oh,
310.
Well,
Exhibit
maybe I'm
B,
wrong.
The track
maybe
map.
Maybe that's track map.
Oh, no, sorry.
I'm maybe wrong on that.
Threw me off. Okay, page 3-21.
3-21, the conditional use permit conditions. Exhibit D.
Number 3, and there's A and B right now, so we'd have a new number C.
A new C.
And staff would suggest the site plan shall be revised to reduce the residential parking area to meet the minimum standards of the land use ordinance?
I like that. Do we got consensus for that?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, I had the other thing we needed to do and I've already lost it.
Well, I'd like to see us clarify
phasing.
And make it contingent upon the map.
I heard Mr. Nestor say that he really thought it was going to roll with the map. In other words, if he gets the map done in a real hurry, he'd get it done. If the map drags out, then he needs those 3, 5, and 8-year intervals to move. Appropriate language for that?
Well, we would change condition number 1C.
On page 321.
Sorry, page 321.
So condition now number, it was 1C, but now it's relettered to be 1D, correct?
No.
No, we're still talking about
1C. No, he's changing 1C.
We'll be revising 1C. That would be to, on phase 2, construction of the residential units within 8 years.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
We're confused over here, Mr. Pedrotti. I thought you had just revised, you'd added a new C.
We added 3C.
To number 3.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
This would be, condition number 1C. Be at the top of the page. So under 1C, phase 2, construction of the residential units within 8 years. And then staff would also...
The point that the map is recorded.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Effective date
of the recording of the map?
Well, yeah. What I put in was phasing of the construction of the project from the final map, from the date of final map recordation.
Okay, where are you putting that?
Under C,
the preamble.
Okay.
Final, we're getting rid of this approval.
From
and
the date of final map recordation as follows.
Okay, now we've got that. Now we're moving on to the issue that Mr. Pedrotti was talking about, and that is making sure we actually build a residential and a commercial, we get a mixed-use project. Now make it happen.
that one again. So phase two, staff proposed the language, construction of the residential units within 8 years or prior to completion of substantial site work on phase one, whichever occurs first.
Brian, that last part, I'm sorry, I've now heard it the second time. I think you mean what you want is that the residential doesn't start before there's significant site work
right.
on the commercial.
Right.
And you use the word prior, and I think you meant to use the word after. Could you read that again?
Yes, construction of the residential units within 8 years or
correct
following completion of substantial site work on phase one.
Okay.
Whichever occurs first. I think that works.
So they have to do it within 8 years, but it has to follow significant site work on phase one. That way we can ensure that the residential is incidental to the commercial as required by the land use ordinance.
Okay.
Is that the concept?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm seeing Mr. Nestor nod his head in the affirmative, so I'm assuming that means he agrees with this.
Can you read us that language one more time?
I'm not sure about the whichever.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I think that screws it up.
I agree.
Could
I
you read it one more time? One more time. I think the ending defeats our...
Okay, construction of the residential units within 8 years or following completion of substantial site work on phase one, whichever occurs first.
So if the site work on phase one doesn't occur, the housing development can still take place within 8 years by that language.
I would suggest we take out whichever occurs
right.
first.
Yeah,
I would
right.
agree.
Take
you
out
don't need it.
Right.
Don't need it.
And it's confusing.
Yeah.
We're trying not to let whichever occurs
yeah,
first occur first.
That's a phrase in the ordinance.
So we're just leaving as that is?
Well, as read, 8 years or it. You know,
read it one more
following
substantial completion of
right.
phase one.
Well, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to make sure the residential ones follow a little bit of construction.
Correct, right.
So why are we saying 8 years or...
I think that's the MAP Act requirement.
Actually, we don't... If we make everything first start from recordation of the final MAP,
right,
then we don't really need to increase that to 8 years.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So we could leave it at 5 years.
Yeah.
And
the
I
following
would,
substantial...
I don't know.
I would just add a further statement in there somewhere is construction of residential units may not occur until substantial site work is done on...
Phase one.
Phase one or
phase,
phase
one.
Three.
On...
Phase one or phase three.
Right. Phase one or three.
Yeah.
Because we said it may occur before the end.
Right.
Okay, I'm hearing consensus for that.
You want to read that again for staff?
We add a additional sentence at the end. Construction of the residential units may not start until substantial completion
commercial.
Or substantial construction of the
of phase, one,
phase
or
one or three.
Yeah. Just saying.
Okay.
No, if you add or three, that doesn't make it second.
Yeah.
Well, it does because phase three is commercial, isn't it?
Right. So he may want to do phase
right.
three first. Just may get some Starbucks really wants to have a place in there or whatever, and they really want building C, and away he goes. He wants to build C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let him do it.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, I think that's the best.
Oh, you guys, this is sort of sad because this is such a great project.
Yeah.
We agree.
No, we're
nobody disagrees, Commissioner Rappa. We think it's a great project.
We've made it a little easier for him.
Four less parking spaces. To
well,
provide,
I guess what
and
I'm,
no right of way to.
We've extended it. We extended
clarity
this
on his,
made it harder here.
And clarity on his extension.
Okay, so
oh,
before we
it.
Lose it, I did have a couple of other items. Ben, did you have some more?
Feature.
That's as written. Yeah, that's as I scratched
okay,
it on
so we've
my
modified
list
J.
Here. So modifying J on the water
to
J.
Mr. Hogue's wording.
And then I still had one more question about noise. Are the double-paned windows and solid doors already required in the standard? I heard Mr. Nestor say that's how he builds.
Double-paned windows are.
And solid doors? Because there are a few sound attenuating measures, I think, that could make the residences more livable. That
right. The kind of the first set of interior mitigation in our noise element would be air conditioning or mechanical ventilation system, windows and sliding doors mounted in low air infiltration rate frames, and solid core exterior doors with perimeter weather stripping and threshold seals. And staff was going to suggest a new condition in order to address that, 35N and 16. 35N is on page 3-17. And it's the same as condition 16 on the conditional use permit. That prior to issuance of construction permits for residential units, construction plans shall show noise reduction construction for interior mitigation 60 to 65, which is a decibel level in parentheses, as shown in the county noise element. And that would include these three items that I just read.
Okay, and so it would specifically list them, or it would refer then to
them? We could specifically list them, or it could just refer it.
I think Title 24 is one going to include a large number of them. I mean, there are others besides us who have review processes that they go through, and you know, certainly, you know, double pane windows is a standard that you need to put in. I mean, this is part of Title 24 when you have to submit that.
Okay, well, that was just my question, really, whether that is already a requirement or not.
It is.
So, okay,
right.
As long as it all is.
Right, there's no, in my opinion, because it's required, why add more conditions?
Yeah, right.
Right, okay, that's where I just wasn't clear whether all of that was already required.
Okay, so we done then?
I've seen one more thing that while we were perusing the conditions, one more condition on page 3-21, number 3A, shows the site plan shall show impervious material. That should be actually pervious material.
Yeah.
Pervious.
Good catch, Mr. Pedrotti.
Right, and he said he was going to use pervious.
Oh, wait a minute. Within the 15-foot creek setback? Does that mean there's going to be parking in the setback area and that parking surface shall be pervious?
I think it's adjacent to.
Let's get clear on that.
The parking, there is a bit of the parking lot that is within the 15-foot setback. But there was a discussion, I think, also about top of the bank.
Are you on the mic?
It is not within top of the bank, but it's within that 15-foot setback. The 15-foot setback listed in the Old Town Corridor design guidelines is for the buildings.
Is your mic on? You just ought to just leave it on.
So it allows for parking lots in the setback?
It's a minuscule part.
Just a little three-quarter.
I'm just asking the question.
And maybe with the parking,
the
reduction in the number of spaces, then it won't even be necessary.
Except this is for the commercial parking, not for the, we didn't reduce the commercial parking.
The requirement was for a
15-foot
setback for buildings.
Oh. Okay, so yeah. It's staff's position that parking areas are allowed within the 15-foot, they're allowed to encroach into the setback area?
That's correct.
Okay, so then this way, the way that this is worded is that the pervious material would only be used in that minuscule amount of property that's within the setback, and I'm wondering why we wouldn't require the pervious material to be used throughout the parking lot.
Because maybe there's some engineering reason why it should not. And I don't, and I would presume when they show up with their drainage plans, they would have made that calculation.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the Public Works could agree with me on that?
Yes, I believe that, well, I'm just trying to surmise why they're being specific about pervious material in that little sliver, because if you're going to make the parking lot, you'd want to make it uniform.
Right.
So we would either want the entire parking lot to be pervious, or or allow to have some impervious, like a standard parking lot, encroach into this 15-foot setback.
Right, well, but the existing rules allow you to put pervious material anywhere you want, correct?
Correct.
But if there's some engineering reason why...
Because of, you know, water quality issues and low-impact development, and there's a whole host of reasons why we're moving away from impervious material. And a parking lot of this size, this close to the creek, I regardless of what the old town standards say, I think we need to do right by the creek, which is being the subject of a lot of restoration activities, and require that the parking lot, unless I hear from Public Works that the whole thing's going to fall into the into the river, we need to require pervious material for the parking lot.
Yeah, the pervious material would be fine for the parking lot. I don't see any reason why they couldn't do that, and it is the direction, you know, we are trying to encourage LID and, you know, minimize your runoff and pollutants, so Public Works would have no problem with them doing the entire parking lot pervious if that's how you want to condition him.
I suggest let's just leave this alone and let the engineers and water quality people address this.
Well, they won't address it unless we require it to be addressed as a condition.
It actually can be part of your drainage solutions, and so I guess to state that they will not address it may be inaccurate. Having personally been involved with several projects that are using pervious pavers, they are the solution to drainage problems, and engineers and those who are involved use them readily to solve the problem. So, I mean, I'm not opposed to them at all. No, it's just that this whole, I mean, it's...
I kind of agree with Jane. Leave it as is.
But we do have an opportunity here to encourage that. We're already conditioning it for this portion, whatever that is, and it doesn't make sense to change surfaces. So why not take this opportunity while we are especially close to the creek?
What's the opportunity? I don't understand.
Well, we are very close to the creek here.
Okay.
As Commissioner Christie pointed out, 15 feet isn't very far.
The opportunity that we have here, Commissioner Melskow, is to make sure that when this great project gets built, that the parking lot is built with pervious paver material, which reduces runoff to the creek and reduces pollutants to the creek.
Okay,
we've got a condition right here.
This condition is only within 15 feet.
Right, but I'm saying let's change that condition to just say the site plan shall require pervious material for the commercial parking lot, period. So that the whole parking lot, including the part that's in the 15-foot setback, the whole parking lot is made out of pervious material to help water quality in the creek.
I think the applicant is nodding that he might not be terribly opposed to that condition. Mr. Nestor?
Pavers are more expensive than asphalt.
We've saved you five or four here today.
We've saved you a pack.
Balance it out. The applicant is not opposed. This is an opportunity for a little less runoff.
Well, we'll see what the motion maker, what he puts in his motion.
I want to get some agreement here so we don't have to hassle about it later.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Will someone else go along, Ben, with those pervious papers?
I agree with Jean.
Papers?
Leave it as is.
Well,
but I don't hear two of us say that.
Jean's working it out. 15 feet is not very far away from the creek. And
your position was that it should not be impervious within the 15 feet.
No. My position is that the whole parking lot, the part that's in the 15-foot buffer and the whole rest of the whole parking lot should be pervious so that it can capture the runoff and help the creek.
But what if the engineer has a problem with the 15 feet or less being a problem to the creek with water quality?
Well, the Public Works just said there really isn't an issue.
I can't tell from the site plan, but how much area are we talking about? That might be a significant...
The large commercial parking lot. If you look at the Maybe she doesn't have one.
It's on SD1 here, and it goes to the heads of several parking lots.
But what's the 15? If the condition were left as worded, how much of that parking lot would have to be impervious? Or be pervious?
Just a little bit of it would be pervious. Most of it would be impervious.
That's a 15-foot setback line.
Oh.
The applicant has shown, at least on the landscape plan, that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 parking spaces, and then 3 on the residential side would all be of a different material. It looks like it says pervious material.
Mm-hmm.
Could we say
that's just shown on the landscape plan?
So say that again, Mr. Pedrotti.
If you look at the landscape plan on your screens, there are approximately 6 spaces shown as.
Make a decision.
She has some experience using pervious surfaces.
It does work. I mean,
all right.
It does add expense, which.
Okay.
I guess my problem is I would really love to see us have something come forward that had been worked out ahead of time. This is just driving me crazy.
Well. We don't disagree, but this is what's before us today, and it isn't added expense. There's no question, but it's a necessary and important expense because we're talking about our water quality in Haystack Creek, which is a tributary to Napomo Creek.
I think I agree, Sarah. So
good.
We don't need to go on about it.
Good.
Well, you're painting a picture as if. Like the remainder of it is just going to be funneled directly into the creek, and no, he can't do that. He's got to have oily water separators and all that sort of thing. I just object to micromanaging the project, determining how we're going to take care of this runoff. To me, we're saying that you got to have this little highlighted portion, impervious. I don't care how he deals with it, as long as he deals with it. Now, it's...
Well, Penny has been... There's 3 votes for the pervious.
Public Works has suggested that it's not going to be so simple to deal with, that it might be better to go one way or the other. So.
Right.
The applicant's not opposed, and we have 3 votes in favor of it. So we've saved the applicant some significant time and expense and money here today, and this is a very reasonable change, in my opinion.
No idea what's
and maybe to add a little level of comfort, on page 312, we do have a standard stock condition that says the project shall comply with the requirements of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 1. That can be handled as an example. His entire parking lot could be sloped to an inlet or something in the parking lot. And then the sand separator, oil, pollutant thing can take care of, the pollutants. And that without even having to address the pervious area so that no runoff is going directly into the creek. You know, he could slope it the other way. These are all things that can be worked out during the design of the project without necessarily, conditioning him to make his entire parking lot pervious. There are different ways to handle pollutants. I'm just saying you could do it all pervious. You could slope an impervious surface to a catch basin. There's many ways to meet the condition that we have standard here, number 14.
Who put number A in there? I mean, that's really the question. Is it just because that's what the applicant proposed?
I didn't find it in the negative deck, of course, as being a requirement.
Maybe it came up with fishing. And we have agreement.
We have
here,
agreement.
So,
but why are we continuing to beat the dead horse?
Who's? I have no idea what the agreement is.
Yeah, I don't either.
Just take out the end of the sentence, 3A, and just say the site plan shall show pervious material for the commercial parking lot.
Okay, do we have 3 votes for that? I hear 2 over there.
Yes.
Okay, we got it. Move on. Let's go.
Okay.
In the spirit of streamlining.
Before
a motion is made here, I did just want to thank the applicant again for bringing this project to us. This is a nice-looking project, and to see so much attention to the common area detail
the bike racks, the street lights, the aesthetic look of the buildings. Very much appreciate the mixed-use project that fits in with our smart growth principles. And nice to see, and hope we'll see more. Thank you very much.
Thank you for saying those. I agree thoroughly. All right. Recommend to, number one, adopt the negative deck in accordance with applicable provisions of CEQA. Number two, approve the vesting track, tentative track 2924 and conditional use permit SUB 2007-00110 based on the findings listed in Exhibits A and C and the conditions in Exhibit listed in Exhibit B and D as modified. And I don't know how we want to go through these, but...
Well, number seven had an amendment to it.
Number 7H, we're removing the last sentence.
This is in Exhibit...
3-11.
So that would Exhibit B as in Baker.
Right, okay. Removing the last sentence from 7H.
Well, we didn't actually just remove it.
No,
we modified it to add identify between and right-of-way.
Would you like me to read what I have in my notes?
Okay.
That sentence says the PSE...
What's your wording there?
That's what I heard him say.
1C, this is on...
same page.
Exhibit D is in Delta.
Page 321. Before we go to that, though, the comment was made to me that was your intention on 3C, the site plan shall be revised to meet the minimum parking requirements of the LUO, meant to pertain only to the residential part of the project?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, then we need to say that. Shall be revised to meet the minimum parking requirements of the LUO for the residential part of the project.
Right.
Is the other part of the project overparked?
I don't think it was.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No.
I think it was right on.
I'm seeing a head shake from Mr. Pedrotti. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, you got that.
Okay, now we're going to
1C.
1C on page 321.
Yes, they got it.
The phasing of the proposed structures. Take it away, Mr. Hogue.
Okay, looks like I've taken over that whole thing. So,
phasing
of the construction of the proposed structures from the date of final map recordation as follows. So that's the first sentence. Then I think we, and I may need a little help here, I think we came to the conclusion that we didn't need to change the number of years in phase two,
correct?
But that instead, at the end of the sentence of that paragraph, add a sentence, construction of the residential units may not precede completion of substantial site work on phases one and three.
No, one or three.
Or three.
One or three.
Is that what you had, Brian?
No, that's correct.
Is that what you had, Brian?
The gist is there, yeah.
Okay. And so that should take care of 1C.
And then C, the next was C. What do we do to that?
We just read that.
Oh, I guess we just read it, yeah. And then the findings in J.
Well, we've still got 3A on that page.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's next on. Okay, let's go to that then, 3A.
The site plan shall show pervious material for the commercial parking lot, period.
Correct. Yes.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
And then the findings of J and...
we have to go back to page 20.
Right, page 320.
And we're adding to the end of the existing wording, and is a beneficial architectural feature.
Correct. Now, is there any others? That's all I had.
Okay, we got a motion.
I'll second the motion.
We got a second. And we can have a roll call vote.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Rapa?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyant?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes.
And I would just like to point out, as the chair did on the last item, that this is another example of the type of project that would go to the Subdivision Review Board under the proposed Planning Commission streamlining. And I'd like to point out that while the conversation was a bit protracted today, at the end of the day, we've saved the applicant substantial hard costs and potential long-term costs regarding
the phasing and the extension of the permit. So I think this illustrates very well the importance of the process, and it illustrates the fact that the current process works well.
Okay. Well, what should we do with the materials we received today?
I would move accept all.
Yeah, do we do number four?
Mr. Chair, Council pointed out to me that we should at least read number four and repeat briefly what we said at the beginning of the meeting.
Okay, but I had a motion to accept all the materials received today to the public record. Did I have a second?
Second.
And I got a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. It sounded unanimous to me. Now we'll introduce hearing item number four.
Item number four is a hearing to consider a request by Steve Olson to allow the establishment of a 5,000-case winery. County file number DRC 2006-00115 and SUB 2006-00222. District 2, Karen Nall is project manager.
Okay. Mr. Hogue, it's up to you to say something.
This application, all of these applications except the lot line adjustment were withdrawn by the applicant. Because the lot line adjustment has been withdrawn, or I mean, because the other applications have been withdrawn, the lot line adjustment now can proceed with its processing, and it now becomes the jurisdiction of the Planning Department hearing officer, and it has been scheduled for a hearing on September 19th.
All right.